Welcome to the UCSF Sports Medicine Podcast, 6 to 8 weeks, Perspectives in Medicine. During our program, we continue to cover a variety of hot topics in the sports medicine world and more.
Welcome everyone to our Sports Medicine Podcast, 6 to 8 weeks, Perspectives on Sports Medicine, where we cover hot topics in sports medicine. You can check us out on Amazon, Spotify, and wherever you get all your favorite podcasts. Today, we're going to be talking about the NBA playoffs with myself, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdowne. A lot of players are getting injured right now, particularly star players that are impacting how long series may go and if they'll make a run to the championship. So the first question, and probably the biggest star player that everyone is concerned about, is Luka Doncic. He has they've reported as possibly a knee strain. Drew, what do you look at when a player comes down with a knee strain? And what exactly is a strain, first of all, to begin with? A lot of people don't even know what that is.
I mean, it can range in severity from just the smallest little tweak to partial tear of a ligament. We'll commonly talk about MCLs, especially as strains and sprains. And I think they're keeping it intentionally vague to not disclose too much. But in watching him play, you know, he's starting to limp up and down the court when he was playing. And I think definitely gives pause about how much it's affecting his game and what he's going to be able to do. But so much of it depends on how much it's hurting, how stable the knee is. Like, that would be the biggest thing. And then structurally, is there something at risk for him continuing to play, to where I know the Mavericks want to win this series, of course, but with Luka, you're looking like 10, 15 years. And if you have, you know, something that you make markedly worse by pushing through in this series, that would be a huge regret on their part. So I think that's probably what they're factoring in, is like, is this just something that, you know, it's going to be sore, take a game or two off, and then he's safe to go? Or even if he feels okay, it's not safe, and this could turn into something much worse.
I think when you look at knee injuries and probably most likely MCL sprains or ACL sprains, what you're looking at is how a player plays also. When you think about when Steph Curry and I think it was 2017, had his grade one MCL, he was out for almost 2 weeks. But if you look at the difference between Luka and how Steph play, Steph cuts, he's running around a lot more. And the way Luka's playing right now is he does, as Drew said, hobble up the court a little bit, plant himself. He can post up. He's a much larger person, probably outweighs Steph by a good 40 pounds. So he can play in a different type of fashion, but it's absolutely going to affect him. And I think the main thing is it going to affect him long-term, or is it just going to hurt during the game? If it's going to affect him long-term, he's not going to be playing. If it affects him during the game, but he is still better than what's coming behind him, then he can probably play.
What about you saw videos of these kind of various taping techniques around his knee. What do those actually do, Drew? Is there something structural going on? Is it placebo? Is it a combination of both?
It depends on what the injury or the underlying problem is. For some things like patellar tracking, so how the kneecap, you know, aligns with the femur, you can redirect it a bit with taping. And things like, you know, patellar tendonitis, sometimes you can offload the tendon a bit by taping. Other deeper injuries, I think usually taping won't do much of anything at all. Sometimes the compression can feel better, but structurally isn't going to do much for those deeper injuries. And I think some of it is definitely placebo, but for like more superficial things, I think it can have some role.
And then I think another, you know, their larger kind of player who plays kind of above his size, Kristaps Porzingis, has a calf injury that reported that was supposedly going to be a big issue for the Celtics in their series. We've seen a lot of calf issues with NBA players over the season, particularly as the playoffs have started. Brian, when an individual comes in with a calf strain, what are you looking for in terms of what may be the injury and what are the criteria for kind of getting people back?
Yeah, for calf strains and most muscle tendon injuries, this is usually something that happens where you have a big muscle that crosses two joints. So if you think like calf really actually starts above your knee and attaches all the way to your ankle, or hamstring starts up at your hip and on your pelvis and then goes and attaches below your hip. And where these happen is where your large muscle transitions to the tendon. So when you have this strain, what you have is a muscle injury where it literally will pull away from the tendon a little bit. When that happens, the problem with a calf strain is if you're a jumping athlete, you can't jump. So if you think about in the NFL, even Joe Burrow last preseason had a calf strain that he was out for the entire preseason, and then that slowed him down. He doesn't jump. Or he very rarely jumps. For a basketball player, you cannot jump at all. And for those of us that have had this, you feel like something horrible has gone on. You can barely walk. You can't walk up and down stairs, let alone cut and let alone jump. So when they say he's out for the first round, he's absolutely out. And you look at different players with this over the course of the year. Gary Payton, GP2 had this and was out for 3 to 4 weeks. So this is the kind of thing that if it happens, it's really based on severity and how quickly an athlete comes back.
Are you worried about a risk of an Achilles rupture, Drew? Is there a correlation between the two?
I don't think it's too strong, but I think any time like you have an injury in that area, you know, there's some possibility that mechanics are different, or maybe the muscle loading changes because of scarring from how it's healed, or, you know, you're just not reacting in the same way. And I think that's kind of where that risk may come in, especially with high performance athletes that are pushing it to the limit and asking as much as possible from that muscle. If it's slightly off, you know, it's kind of hard to totally define, but it seems to make that there's probably some connection that some smaller injury can turn into, you know, a bigger problem down the road.
I don't know. I mean, I think that this came up with KD when he played with us and he tore his Achilles. It was like, well, he shouldn't have played because he had the calf strain, but you're in totally different areas. And I think it's a nice thing to hypothesize. But the reality is for jumping athletes that hit their late 20s, early 30s, that have been jumping athletes their entire lives, I think it's just load. I think calf strains happen because we put high load on them. Achilles ruptures happen because your tendon just plain wears out. It's a relatively common injury to see both in everyday athletes, but also in high performance athletes and basketball players as they hit their 30s. And that's probably at a certain number of jumps within their Achilles that is going to put them at higher risk. So Porzingis can't play because he can't play. I wouldn't hold him out because his Achilles is going to rupture.
Yeah, and I wouldn't hold him out either. Like if he has full strength, no pain, able to jump, then it wouldn't be like, hey, we need to just keep you out 2 more weeks because that's going to change something. But the thought process of like, does this mean, you know, is there some higher risk? And we wouldn't have anything to change. But I think it's an interesting to think about of like how those mechanics are linked, how those injury patterns are linked.
Yeah, I think the other thing is you look at the difference in severity. Jamal Murray was day to day with a calf strain and he's fine now. Of course, winning and beating Minnesota twice is going to make everything feel better, especially when you go up into Minnesota to win. But the severity of these muscle tendon strains is really, really different. You can have something that feels like a little tweak during a game that the next morning feels fine. And other times where a little tweak can actually get worse and worse. And by the next day, you can barely walk. I guess for Drew and Nirav, how do you work these up? Is this something that is just physical exam? Do these athletes get MRIs, ultrasound?
For professional athletes, I think a little bit differently. For like the average athlete that kind of comes in, usually just based on physical exam and kind of where they're sore. I think if someone's not responding to physical therapy, then you could potentially get an MRI and ultrasound. I actually find ultrasound sometimes a little bit more useful than MRI because MRI just shows so much inflammation and edema, whereas an ultrasound can see, is there kind of some slight tear in the muscle or kind of where the muscle meets the tendon. So usually for a general athlete, no, I don't think I get that. I can imagine if there is kind of a short turnaround for a return to play, such as in a professional athlete, that maybe an MRI can help determine, is the pain you're feeling consistent with the amount of inflammation there? Is it something that you can maybe potentially push through versus, no, this is actually really bad. So I think it varies based on the athlete, how quickly they need to get back and what level of sport they're playing.
And I think the MRI is really useful in seeing structurally what that muscle looks like. And that, Nirav was saying, for the elite athlete can make a difference. So for, you know, somebody like Jamal Murray or Kristaps Porzingis, like, is this a day-to-day thing or is this like you're out 2 weeks? And so for the team and planning, for the athlete and understanding like what they can push towards, I think that information can be helpful. If it's like me, like it's not going to change the management. I'm still going to get better in a few weeks and a couple days here and there isn't going to really impact anything.
I think that's a good point. One, everyday athletes don't need MRIs. I think for professional athletes, sometimes the normal MRI is really important too, or something that shows something really minor because it's going to give them the confidence to push through. I think even though we don't want to overuse MRI and we don't necessarily want to say like, well, after every game, total body MRI for every player, that's just not going to be valuable. But the prognostic factor, the fact that we've gotten better about using MRI to predict how long players are going to be out, which has implications for the entire team. And the reality is that their body is their commodity. And I think being able to understand that that is how a professional athlete's going to be treated because that is how they make their money is important. And I think realistically, that negative MRI is probably more important than the positive MRI. The negative MRI says you can go back whenever you feel comfortable. The positive MRI, I think, transitions to let's see how you feel every day. But when you feel ready, then we're going to let you start going back because we don't use MRI to necessarily grade healing.
And I think it's kind of sticking along the lines of soft tissue injuries. The one that a lot of people were concerned about was OG Anunoby for the Knicks during the game. Everyone saw him kind of grab up high, kind of at the higher level where his hamstring is. What do you look for in terms of hamstring issues, Drew? Like, I mean, let's start first on the sideline. How can you differentiate whether it's a cramp versus it's an injury? Because everyone's like, oh, it's just a cramp.
Cramps usually, as we stretch, like those will resolve and get better and stretch, hydrate, take a little break. And then more significant injury, just more pain. The thing with hamstrings, especially one thing we worry about is, did the tendon tear off of the bone or is this an injury within the muscle? And the muscle one is way more common. That's going to happen almost all the time. Occasionally it'll tear, the tendon will tear at its origin. Usually with that, we see a lot of bruising. Not right away, but like within the, you know, the next day or so, a whole lot of bruising down the thigh. And then also, you know, with both of them, you can feel a pop, but like sometimes you feel that pop higher up. And then the last thing, you can sometimes feel a defect. You know, if you can palpate along the hamstring, sometimes you can feel like where that muscle or the tendon tore. And that's something also that you won't, you know, you won't have that same feeling with a cramp.
We did a study, Drew, you weren't on that study, sorry, we didn't include you, me and Brian did.
Come on.
Looking at hamstring injuries in NBA players, I think one of the interesting things was we found that there was a high rate of some sort of subsequent injury. I think it was like 80% almost of either another hamstring injury or some other injury during the course of the season. So I think a lot of players will get this hamstring injury and it's like, oh, just a hamstring, it's basketball. But I think the importance of the hamstrings for giving stability to the knee, providing stability elsewhere is really key. So even though athletes may be feeling good, it is one of those things that you see players get this, and then there's like this cascade of stuff that goes on during the season. Brian, do you use MRI for athletes? If let's say you get an x-ray, no avulsion, do you get an MRI on a hamstring injury, just like a calf? Or
I think it's important, just like Drew said, you want to get the MRI to look at location. And I think it really helps for severity. There was a really, really old study that looked at using MRI to predict how long athletes would take to get back. And the more severe, not surprisingly, the longer it would take to get back. Basically, for each grade, you're out for a week. So grade one, which is very minor swelling, you're going to be out for a week. Grade two, you're going to be out for 2 weeks. Grade three, which is the most severe, which you can think of a muscle tendon tear that's through a third of your hamstring, you're going to be out for about 3 weeks, which I think is really important for prognostic factors. In terms of following patients, I don't use it for following patients. I think ultrasound is used by some people because you can look at muscle structure. It's important to think about too, that when this comes back, as you're remodeling your muscle, it doesn't come back perfect. It comes back with a little bit of scar. And I think that's why it's so important to give these athletes that complete rest and they have to feel 100%. My favorite example, even though this is getting really old, is Matt Kemp when he played for the Dodgers. I felt like every 8 weeks, you would see the same thing. You would see Matt Kemp, amazing potential, hits a double, pulls a hamstring running to first. Matt Kemp, super strong, got back early. Back after only 4 weeks, pulls a hamstring running for second. And I think really, if you look at how they're managing OG Anunoby, it's rest, you're out until you feel good, because that second injury is going to be worse than the first one, and he's going to miss more time. And for the Knicks, who look pretty darn good, that might be into the finals, and you're going to hold him out for the Eastern Conference Finals, at least at this point.
Well, I don't know if Thibodeau would ever hold anyone out to play. Maybe now kind of shifting over gears a little bit more in the Bay Area with the Warriors season kind of coming to an early end, the first time in a while where we're not kind of deep in the playoffs. People obviously are questioning who could they potentially bring in, and do you keep the team as it is right now, or do you bring in a veteran like Kevin Durant or LeBron James? But I think the concern a lot of people have would, you've got potentially a lineup with Klay, Steph, Draymond, and then someone else, and then an older veteran. What do we have to look for in terms of these older athletes as they get in their late 30s? Like obviously Durant has a pretty significant injury history with his Achilles and multiple kind of, you know, foot injuries early in his career, whereas you've got LeBron, for the most part, actually stayed very healthy, but has a lot of wear and tear on it. Would you rather have an athlete a little bit younger with an injury history, or an older athlete who stayed relatively healthy but has a lot of miles on their body? Ooh,
that's a pretty hard would you rather. So if I'm comparing KD and LeBron, I'm taking LeBron based on his injury history and his body type. When you look at people that are 6'10 and above, their injury risk is bigger than people who are 6'5 to 6'10 and built like LeBron, of which I think there's two people in the world, me and LeBron. that being said, I think both of them are at a risk just because of their age. When you look at injury history, they're not necessarily fluky injuries. I think the NFL, we look at it as more fluky injuries. You tear your ACL on one leg, you tear your ACL on the other leg. For basketball, these wear and tear type injuries and the type of things in the lower extremity that you get when you're so tall are a factor, at least in part, of being so tall. So when you look at KD, knee hyperextension injury, you're 7 feet tall, you have more of a fulcrum. Center of gravity is higher up, so you're more at risk for these hyperextension injuries. He's had stress fractures in his foot, which most commonly happen in your 20s. He shouldn't be at risk for another one. But again, they happen when they're over 7 feet tall. And you think about Yao Ming, that's essentially what shut him down, was his inability to heal these chronic foot stress fractures. And then you think about the soft tissue injuries that he's had, the Achilles and the muscle strains that he had. If I'm picking one person or the other, I'm going to pick LeBron just because his body type and his size suggests that he's going to be a little bit more durable. Now, if you ask, am I going to pick either of them? No, we look slow. Like, I think what the problem is as we get older, our bodies just aren't as fast. And there's no real way to counteract the fact that as we get older, our endurance may get better. So you may be able to play 40, 42 minutes at a certain rate, but that quickness disappears. And that's because your ability to have this fast twitch muscle, which is a very specific type of muscle, deteriorates over time. Your muscle fibers actually switch from one type to another. So you're not going to have that like quick burst of energy. You may be strong, you may look great, but you're not going to be quite as fast.
It sounds pretty much sums up all of us in our department right now. So, yeah. And then last thing, while we wrap up here, and we'll ask Brian first, who's going to win NBA championship?
Early on, I was going Denver because I didn't put too much thought into it. I was realizing, I think this might be the first time in the last 20 years, there is no California team past the first round in the Western Conference. So by the time I'm ready to watch basketball, all the games are pretty much over. So it's been a little bit disappointing. But I'm going to go out on the limb and say the Knicks are at least going to make the finals. And it's going to be, yeah, I know, it's going to be Knicks, Nuggets, and the Knicks are going to win.
Wow.
Hey, at some point it's got to happen, right?
Yeah.
How about you?
I'll say, I think it'll be OKC and Boston. And then OKC will win.
Have you seen Tatum's face? He can't bring himself to smile. I can't get his performance when he played the Warriors out of my head. When he gets to the Eastern Conference Finals, if he's playing the Knicks, I think the Knicks have too much momentum.
Yeah, I think just more talent, better team, and he'll finally make it happen.
Yeah, my prediction is I thought the Timberwolves going to make it, but seeing how Denver is kind of overtaking them, I think the experience is going to bring Denver. It'll be Denver-Boston with the Denver win. 5 games. It'll go 4-1 wow. Denver. Jokic, wow. Jokic will win and be totally disinterested.
Yeah.
He's got horses. Okay.
Yes, the horse, right. All right, everyone. Thank you once again to listen to our podcast, 6 to 8 Weeks, Perspectives on Sports Medicine. Check us out on the web at 6to8weekspodcast.com. You can also find us on Amazon, Spotify, and social media, and hopefully enjoy our episode. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the UCSF Sports Medicine Podcast, 6 to 8 Weeks, Perspectives in Medicine. What do you think of this topic? Connect with us now. In addition to finding our contact form, you'll also find our social media links and our entire 6 to 8 Weeks episode archive. Help us grow our listenership by liking, subscribing, and sharing everywhere. We're eager to hear from you, and we'll be sending you more great thought-provoking content in less than 6 to 8 weeks.